All right, gentlemen, welcome to the exclusive interview of the Council of Man. I'm here with David Niles, as always, and we are joined with Steve Picorni. Steve has an MA in theology from the Steubenville.
Not the Ohio State.
The Ohio State. The real Ohio State. He also is a part of the St. John Paul II Institute of Marriage and Family Studies, and he has a wife, and I'm assuming, how many kids do you have, Steve?
I have two on earth and one in heaven.
Okay, awesome, awesome. And he lives in San Antonio, Texas. Steve is the author of a book that he generously sent me called Redeemed Vision, Setting the Blind Free from Pornified Culture. And we wanted to bring him on today to talk to him a little bit about his book, the culture, porn, and just whatever else we decide to talk about in this 35, 40 minutes that we have. Is that decent?
Yeah, no, I think that's probably an accurate description
of what's going to happen.
I'm
the only one drinking today. Dave does not have a beer. Actually, Steve may. I don't know. Steve, are you?
I do not. I'm actually running through the whole Nineveh 90 thing. Some of your listeners might be aware of that. So I'm I sacrificed except for Sundays. So I imbibed yesterday. And there we go.
All right. Good deal. Good deal.
So good, I'm the for only one. Good for you.
Good for you. So you guys can.
Yes, it is.
Can watch me drink. Okay, no, let's just dive into it, Steve, because I appreciate you sending me the book. I thoroughly have enjoyed it. Like I said, I was telling you right before we started recording that it's a meaty book. You can tell that you've done your due diligence. This is not something that you've written, in a week's time frame or a month's time frame. It has over 450 pages. And it is not a book, for me, I'm not a great reader, Steve, to be honest with you. Like, I'm a slow reader. It takes me a while to comprehend. Reading John Paul II's Theology of the Body was just a nightmare for me because I had to read each Wednesday audience like 18 times before I even understood what the heck he was even trying to say. And half the time, let's be honest, Dave, half the time, I still didn't even get it.
Well, I don't think that's your fault. I think it's, his original text is pretty heavy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's a philosopher, and he writes as he would speak, going cyclically. And if you don't know where he's at, you might get thrown off the whirlwind there.
That's exactly what, yeah. So every Tuesday we were reading it. So we went through all of his Wednesday audiences, and we would kind of joke like I feel like he's circling his prey. And pretty soon he's going to say what he's trying to, he's going to just come out with it here any day.
Right.
But the way he would circle around the topic and like slowly close in on it,
it's like, okay, it's almost there.
When he finally did, it was like, all right, I think I actually got it.
The way I like to describe John Paul the Great's, the way he talks about things, and it's not just his theology of the body, it's like a prism, right? He's trying to talk about something utterly beautiful, walking around that subject. And every time you get to a certain section, another ray of light, or shall we say grace, is hitting that subject. So it takes time for us to ponder. I mean, we're talking about realities that are transcendent, that we're built for, and that we need to take time to soak in these things. So simply saying it, most of us are comfortable with speaking linearly from point A to point B. No, he's like, we're going to take a topic and we're going to have an entire banquet around this and stay here for a couple of weeks. So it's kind of like going up on the mountaintop with Jesus, Peter, James, and John, and we're going to put up tents and we're going to love where we're at and just
stay
be
alive.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody could say so much about one Bible verse, like
he extracted so much out of
in Genesis
2,
like
26 or whatever it is that he continually referenced over and over again.
The man leaves his father and mother and cleaves to his wife and the two. He talked about that verse for days and days and days. I mean, it's just like, God, but you read it, it's like, man, that's amazing. Anyway, there's a lot, I think. So the cover of your book actually reminds me of John Paul II. He became Pope, and one of the first things he did was have all the fig leaves removed from the Sistine Chapel. Because it was kind of the idea of the difference between naked without shame and what's the, You know what I'm saying?
And not being shameful or being shameless.
Yes, shameless. Yes, that's
depending on that. And I'd love to let's jump the conversation into that, because when you and I recommend everybody who's watching this or listening to this, pull up it's an artwork called by Titian. Okay. And it has a variety of names, and one of the titles that's given to it is called the Sacred and the Profane. I don't speak Italian, so don't make me try to translate in Italian. But if you look at the image, and we're looking at this, and you have two different persons sitting here. In the middle is Cupid, in fact, and you have one woman, and if we're talking about sacred and profane to most of the world. Okay, and again, the book here, Redeemed Vision, Setting the Blind Free from the Pornified Culture, is written to Catholics, for Catholics primarily. Because if we don't get our house in order, we're not going to be able to help anyone. And frankly, in many cases, our house is a mess. And so we need help here. And so as we're looking here, a lot of Catholics, if we're talking about sacred and profane, they would say the woman on the left who's clothed is the sacred, and the one who's unclothed, she's bare-breasted, is the profane one. But actually, if we really study the figurines, it's actually the reverse. And why can we say that? Well, you'll see the woman on the left, her body language. We start with body language. What is the language of the body? She is trying to ignore the woman on the right who's trying to engage her, right? It is her. It's the ornamentation of the dress. It's this big grandiose that it's all. It's the profane of just having gobs of clothing. Again, we're not saying that clothing is bad or the clothing is good. Clothing just is. There's no virtue to clothing. We talk about clothing being modest. No, modesty is a virtue. Modesty is attached to human beings. So this is really important. And whereas you look at the woman on the right, if you look at her body language, she's simply being who she is. She's not showing off. And we chose the artist who created this as a friend of mine. His name is Tobin Pilotti. He's a genuine artist, loves working with physical materials, but also a graphic artist. And we have this whole thing of the pixelation. And it's the culture we live in, especially that's pushed upon us from a lot of the digital media that is covering over our ability to see people, whether they're how much clothing or lack thereof of clothing. The other dead giveaway from this painting that tells us of who is who, look in the background. I don't know if you guys study this, but in the left, the figure on the left is a castle. So representing that of secular society. In the right is what's in the background. There's a church. And what is that saying about here? There's a profound message here saying if God is the one who created the body and created everything, right, then there's something profound here about the body and learning how to see the body profoundly in the way we're called to see it. And if we're looking at this whole project, the project of Redeemed Vision, and Adam, you're absolutely correct. This is a project that I was working on over 14 years. If you couple in my own compulsion to pornography, there was a 12 years sprinkled in there. I'm receiving a genuine healing from God through grace. A two-part project: one, to give a kind of a game plan to those who are experiencing an attraction to pornified image, or those who have what we call a compulsion to pornography, to be able to break that attraction permanently. So not dealing with mere coping mechanisms, whereas a lot of the advice out there, that's what it's about, but really to break that attraction permanently. And then secondly, is going after the wider culture, but specifically the Catholic culture, that in many cases inadvertently allows for body shaming. There's a ton of body shaming going on where we judge people based on what they're dressed like, what they look like, all these different aspects. And starting with ourselves, we have a heavy judgment upon ourselves and not viewing ourselves as good. And it's going to be very difficult to see the goodness and beauty and truth of who other people are if we don't see who we are. And this is where John Paul, going back to theology of the body, uses this language of these masters of suspicion, how what we project in ourself, we project onto others. And certainly it can go beyond just the mere sexual realm, but we're narrowing our gaze here and thinking, just for a simple describing point, would be that the idea that a man and a woman who aren't married, if they're alone in the same room together, they're obviously lusting after each other. And there's a lot of people who take this notion thinking it's impossible for a man to see a woman or a woman to see a man for who they truly are. And this is a whole notion that we've got to get into, because we're losing the capability of forming genuine bonds of friendship, to form genuine intimacy, what we're looking for. And it's because we're blind, and it's being pushed on us by the pornified culture. And in a nutshell, what that is a culture that's inspiring and encouraging people to use one another as a means of selfish gratification. And so there's a lot to unpack here. And that's why this is not necessarily for the faint of heart. But if we're going to get to root answers, which means radical answers, then we've got to go and unpack this and to go to where the evidence lies is the truth.
Okay, so that was a whole lot. I'm glad you kind of unspooled there, because that kind of eliminated some of the beginning questions that I had for you, so I can jump into some of the exciting ones that I was looking forward to.
Awesome. The juicy ones.
Yeah. So I like, at the very beginning, you talk about how these coping mechanisms of people who are struggling with porn. Dave and I know several men who are struggling with porn. Dave and I both have, by the grace of God, porn is not something that we struggle with on a daily basis. Pray it never will be again. But you're talking about these coping mechanisms, and at the beginning, I'm just going to read these like six bullet points really quick, because I think they're really great. And you're basically saying, hold on, this isn't like the answer. And here's the six bullet points. You said how to get over the problem. Just stop looking at it. The second one, just look away. Third one is put the computer in a public place. Fourth is put a porn filter on your computer. Five is pray it away. Six is get an accountability partner or a spiritual director. And I think that hit me almost instantly. It's in your prologue. It's like the second or third page in your whole book. But it hit me. It's what kind of hooked me, because Dave and I, like I said, we talk about this quite a bit with men. And we realize that it's not just something you pray away. It's not something that... You know, even Matt Frad talks about this. He's done a really great job with Integrity Restored, talking about, you know, the chemical process, that the dopamine and all this stuff that happens when you're looking at porn, and how it becomes actually a drug. But when you're not sunk into that porn culture, when you're not like addicted to porn, it's very easy to just look at it and say, well, just stop, just don't do it anymore, or just like, okay, here's it. Dave and I have an accountability group where we have a text message group between Dave and I and a couple other men. And anytime anybody falls by looking at porn or something, they text. And all they say is, I failed. And by saying that, in the next 24 hours, all the men in that group fast for one meal. You know, and so that's an accountability, system. But it's not that's not the answer. That's not like... the answer, and you go into it immediately following that, you talk about counterfeits, and you talk about when people are looking in the government, when they're looking for counterfeit money, they don't study all the false dollar bills. They don't study all the counterfeit dollar bills. They study the true dollar bills, so that way when they see something that's not true, they recognize it immediately, which I thought was a brilliant point to start off, because a lot of men don't see that, or don't maybe realize that. So that obviously the parallel that you're drawing is you have to see true love and study true love. That way, whenever you don't see true love, you recognize it. Is that, I'm hoping that's what you were getting at.
Yeah. And even for it, it's not a bad synopsis. I mean, what's the problem with coping mechanisms? In a nutshell, they don't work. Because what's the goal here? Because the goal here is that we don't desire it. The problem is that we still desire it. And for a lot of guys, and again, an increasing number of women, and I talk about some of the issues with women here, like women who are experiencing this attraction to pornography, and even for them, the shame may go even deeper, because they've been told for so much of their life, this is just a guy's issue. Okay? So we got to see this is affecting a whole lot more. So coping mechanisms themselves are never designed to actually get to the root problem. And what's the root problem? The root problem is a heart and a vision issue. Whereas we are not seeking out the genuine forms of intimacy that are actually going to satisfy the deep desire and thirst for love that we're all looking for. And instead, because we don't see what we think is going to actually satisfy us, we are going to sell out to what I call the septic tanks of our culture. These are the and obviously it's more than just the pornified culture, but to narrow our gaze on that, this is a place where we want to say there's the solutions for satisfying this deep thirst in us, this thirst for love, for intimacy, for connection, for union with other people. How it's paid with two ways. If that desire has been tainted so much with lust. And we actually have come, this is one of the problems that's going on in the Catholic culture, is we've equated attraction with lust. We've attracted even nakedness with lust. And we can't separate the two and realize that from the beginning, they were naked without shame. They were good. They saw each other in a goodness, in a way here. And even though concupiscence has entered into our world, we still, through the power of grace, have the ability to see each other as persons, precisely as persons. So if we're being taught that attraction equals lust and nakedness equals lust, well, we're basically given two options. You can either go and stuff that desire, right? And you try to stuff something that is supposed to be life-giving for long enough, then what's going to happen? There's going to be an explosion that's come out. And I'm sure you guys have heard that analogy before. To put on the septic tank analogy, it's either we die of dehydration or we drink from the septic tank that makes us want to vomit. So yeah. What's more appealing? Drinking, suffering, dying from dehydration, or drinking something, even though it may not satisfy me? Well, drinking something, of course. And we look around the world we live in. Yeah, everybody's throwing up. It's normal. But we got to question the premise. Is it normal? Is that really what we really want? Is coping mechanisms really what we want to be? Or don't you really want to be free to the degree where when I see an image that is trying to get me to use a person, or we hear a song on the radio, or we read something, instead of being moved to lust, I'm moved to this sadness, this, Oh my God, I say that most reverently. Oh my God, look at this great gift of a person that is being tossed, their dignity is being attempted to be trampled underfoot. And that desire is way more satisfying because then there's empathy there. And that's exactly what the problem with the pornified culture. And remember, this is way bigger than this, just the stuff on the internet. This is the movies, television shows, music. This is anything that's trying to get us to use another person. And we think this is normal. And I shout from the rooftops, it's not. But many of us we've been born and bred into this world that has normalized this. And so we have to learn to see. And this is the one element that is not being discussed wholesale in many cases when talking about the issue of pornography or attachment or compulsion to pornography. And until we learn how to actually see, then we're not going to be able to re-engage the heart. And without our hearts, gentlemen, you know this, we are dead. And you got a lot of what I call porn zombies walking around trying to consume flesh all over the place. I mean, though, it's not no coincidence that zombies are big business right now, because this is the world we see in. People are using people left and right. You'll see on people's vehicles, zombie response team or zombie outbreak response team. Well, is there? Right in the world we live in. And it's, I think most people just accept this as status quo. And so one of the great things, the message I want to proclaim to those, especially to those who are trapped in this, to say, trapped in just feeling tempted, look at pornography, masturbate, feel guilty, go to confession the next day. The powers of the pornography brings you right back in. And then this is a vicious cycle. Of sacramental, one of my friends calls it sacramental viciousness. Okay, whereas it's supposed to be life giving and bringing freedom, instead it just seems to couple more guilt and shame. Like, oh, I gotta go to confession again. Oh my gosh! And I'm not saying to stop doing those things. Engage the sacraments. Engage grace. We need a boatload of grace. I know my own life have needed it. But until we get to the root of it, which is our hearts and our vision, there cannot be genuine freedom. So we've got to get to the root of here and realize the body is not the problem. Attraction is not the problem. That nakedness is not the problem. That it is lust that's the problem. And genuine freedom from that, to not desire it, is not just a real possibility, but it is our great calling.
So, Steve, you kind of touched on this a little bit. You know, our sexual drive is maybe the most powerful force within us. You know, it's the thing that God gave us to fulfill his very first commandment, to go be fruitful and multiply. So, you know, we were made for the other person. As men, we are made for women. So for someone who has developed this reflex of, I see a beautiful woman and I just naturally, my brain kicks into this other gear, and the lustful, you know, like I can feel my face get flush and temperature, my heartbeat increases, and I'm not trying to do any of this, but my brain has just, I've taught it to do it over a series of years. What do they do? How does someone overcome that? Because, you know, they're not, it's not a choice that they make. So how long does it take? What do you got to do?
Sure. So you've been programmed. And that's the first thing that I would say to those, that person. They have to acknowledge they've been programmed. Okay. If we don't know there's a problem, then there's no hope for a solution. Okay. In a certain sense. Okay. So first we got to know that we are blind. And then we go into what are those three parts, the three problems with pornography. Number one would be that the chemicals there, even just knowing about the chemicals, studying about the chemicals, why I talk about it heavily in Brain Science in Chapter 3, which is becoming more popular through Matt Fred, through organizations like Fight the New Drug, which is a secular organization, great material. And just knowing the chemicals there, what are stirred up, helps to illuminate the fact that I can't break this in my own power. And this is why we always, at the end of the day, this is not some, as we were talking about before we got on the air, talking about the Protestant work ethic, right? This is not something we pull ourselves up by our own bootstrap. And I think there's because I deal with a lot of clients, something I do called Freedom Coaching or freedom-coaching.net. So anybody can go check it out there. You can get the book there, in fact. Basically, there's a lot of fear. There's a tremendous amount of fear in thinking this idea that, you know, if I don't do this on my own power, or I give this up, then I'll have nothing. We have to say, no, we've got to give this up. But that does beg the question, Dave, what you asking, you know, how do we give this up? Going into the second issue, that an intimacy issue, that those who are into pornography have traded true intimacy for false intimacy. So there's really a rediscovery. And this is where the beauty of John Paul the Great's theology of the body is, helping to put flesh on the gospel, because it's the words of Christ, it's the person of Jesus Christ that is ultimately the answer for this whole thing. And in and through the incarnation, it's an incarnational, it's putting flesh on spirituality. And because most people have been programmed by the notion, you know, that attraction equals lust and all those things, the body itself is bad somewhere within them, they're running away from the body instead, because there's a fear, because they've tasted the forbidden fruit, to use that proverbial language. And so the answer is to run away from that. No, we got to go to the root. The root cause, the problem is not the body. The root answer is found in the body, primarily through the body of Jesus Christ. So are we entering into genuine intimacy with Jesus Christ? Do we know him intimately? Are we giving him not just our good things, but our bad things? So there's going to be a process there that's going to happen. So I would hesitate to say that overnight somebody would be free with this. Could that happen? Could God unleash that? Absolutely. Absolutely could happen. I'm not here to limit grace, right? But there's also many times there has to be an ownership here. And I think that's what God wants from us as men. He wants us to own it so that it means something. I get this all the time in my marriage. If my wife comes up with an idea, I kind of dismiss it. But if she can kind of gently use her feminine ways to kind of walk me into projects and I take ownership of it, kind of like the giant tree fort that we're clubhouse we're building in our backyard now, I kind of take ownership and then I'm gonna go get it with all that I am. And that's how God, he wants us to own it. But it's going to be through intimacy and knowing that we are loved. So many of us, because we have no idea what intimacy is or even love, what genuine love is, then we settle for the counterfeits. So we've got to come to rediscover this, okay? And then the third piece, as I've mentioned here, is that vision piece. Can we see the body, regardless of how a person is dressed or lack thereof, and see them as a person? And there's some mistaken notions, and I don't go too much into the book on this phrase I'm going to use, but there's a mistaken notion that says men are visual. And I want to say, no, women are visual also. Both men and women are. And we take it for granted that because a man's visual, he's bound to lust. That's baloney. We got to realize that because we were given eyes, we were given eyes to see. But like Morpheus says to Neo in the first Matrix movie, yes, ignore the other two Matrix movies. Right in the middle where correct. Morpheus is, if you remember that scene, right? Morpheus comes out, Neo comes out, he's in the real world, and then whatever the real world is there. And Neo asks, why do my eyes hurt? And Morpheus responds, you've never used them before. Most of us are deathly afraid to actually use our eyes for what they're intended, to see the beauty of the person. So let's go more deeper. Let's get a little more practical on this, right? Okay. So I would say first and foremost, we got to be aware of our emotions. Okay. Because our emotions, in the world we live in, we've equated love with emotions. We've equated emotions with everything. So if it's emotional, if it feels good, go do it. So we've got to take possession of it. And if you do a lot of the brain science, the comparison between the left and right hemisphere of the brain. Very, very basic. Your left hemisphere is going to be your logical, your rational processing. Your right brain is your emotional, your imagination. There's no logic there. So what should be happening is our logic and our reason is directing our emotions. Most of us, a lot of us, I'd say, are guided by our emotions. And that's what gets us into trouble. So what I would say is called the BEGAN process. Okay. And the BEGAN process is BGAN. Okay. So, and I don't even mention this in the book. This is something I'm developing as we're talking. Okay. But I think it's going to be helpful for listeners who are viewers of this. So first is breathe. So taking a deep breath. Okay. Cause that connects your brain and heart. It's very hard to, when you're breathing, to get into fantasy land and which is Stupidville. Stupidville. And then also connecting us to the Holy Spirit. Second, the G, gentle. Because a lot of us, because maybe there's been a pattern, we've been doing this for freaking ever. And so we feel those emotions start coming on and we start to beat ourselves up. And I'm saying, gentlemen, don't be gentle. Go back to Christ. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. He's gentle with us. We need to be the same way. Not easy with us. Don't take this, this isn't serious. No, take this very seriously. Be gentle. Third is be aware. What are your emotions? Because I think a lot of us are terrified of our emotions. I mean, it says that women are maybe more in touch with their emotions, maybe, right? But we as men were created with emotions as well. So what is that emotion? Name it. Name it out loud. Okay? And be aware of that emotion. Don't run from it. Okay? And fourth here is to take what's the next right step? Began. What is the next right step? So using our rational brain, what's the next right step? Instead of, I'm feeling this urge, I'm going to go look at pornography and masturbate. No, I'm going to go pray perhaps. And this is where it starts off at coping mechanisms, but we're going to begin to internalize it the more we get into this. I'm going to go into gratitude. Psychologically, we cannot be both grateful and what I call blasted, bored, lonely, hungry, angry, stressed, tired, turned on, emotional, like a 15-year-old emotional girl, and depressed. Okay? We can't be both grateful and blasted at the same time. And so focusing on gratitude is going to help to pull us out of there and then go do something better there. So that's a first way in which we start to work with the emotion. We got to take control of our emotions. Don't be led by them. Then what do we do with this vision piece? Okay. Let me give you a true story here. And I talk about this in the book. Adam, I think you've read it already. It's a 9-year-old boy. He's at the park with his family. They're doing a picnic and, he comes across a quote unquote gentleman's club. There's nothing gentlemanly about those club, but for lack of time here, a gentleman club ad, but two topless women in this ad. He immediately drops this ad and runs to his older sister and says, I found a yucky picture. She says, go talk to your older brother. The older brother says, show me the picture. So he goes, shows his older brother. Older brother immediately takes it and rips it up. Two very important questions. Number one, why was the younger brother able to immediately go to his older sister and tell her about it? And second, how is the older brother immediately able to go and rip that ad up? Because for a vast majority of us, what are we going to do with it? We're going to hide it like it's buried treasure. Like, oh my gosh, I just won the lottery. Yeah. Why? Because our experience of the body, shall we say, of the naked human body has been one of fear, one of hiding, one of repression, one of that there's something wrong with that. And if we've been raised in that kind of culture of suspicion, that kind of culture of fear, then we're going to, when we encounter something, and we're seeing more and more in our culture, we're seeing it, I mean, we're seeing pornified ideas in even G-rated cartoons. That's why we as parents need to be aware of what our kids are watching. Then we're not going to know how to handle that. So why was the, why were they able to do that? What was the whole family? Well, because they grew up in an environment where it was, the body was normalized. They had a normal experience of the body. They didn't hide when, say, there somebody's in the bathroom, right? Somebody comes into the bathroom. There isn't this, oh, get out! This is, it's normal. Or somebody's in the shower. They came in from the family, not showing off. Hey, what's going on? How can I help? You know, it's a normalized experience. So we've got to first come to this notion that the body is not a problem, that we can see the body appropriately. Now, what's the recommendation of way in which I would recommend doing this? Well, we have something in the Catholic Church that nobody in the world has, pretty much. It's called sacred art. And it's art especially where the body is exposed appropriately. Okay? If you ever read Bad Catholic, the blog by Mark Barnes, I know we talked about this years ago. It's one of the ones, one of the things I'll talk about, especially with clients. But we have a wealth of beauty within the Catholic Church. And I think this is another important aspect that needs to be discussed. And what I talk about heavily in chapter 10 is we have no clue what beauty is. We've never really learned what beauty is. We've accepted the notion that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. No, it isn't. Thomas Aquinas lays out, especially, there's three elements of beauty that we've got to come to understand. And when we can be trained in that, like the real $100 bill, when the counterfeit is proposed to us, we're going to be able to reject it. So flip this around and go deeper. If we can be trained and programmed into genuine images of the body that artists who have painstakingly, and even iconographers, have taken painstakingly tried to elucidate and illumine for us the truth of the human body, which brings about the mystery of God. When we've been programmed by these images and are trained by these images, guess what happens, brothers? We become inoculated to the pornified culture. What used to be a total stumbling block becomes this annoying mosquito that, yeah, there might be a tinge of lust, but then I'll go look at beautiful images of, say, Maria Lactanes, of Mary openly breastfeeding Jesus. No, gentlemen, breasts were not created for us. They were created first and foremost for the woman and then for her child, not as playthings. And we can learn how to see. And in the presence of true beauty, guess what? The counterfeit loses its appeal. It's ugly to us, and we were made for genuine beauty. And I'm here as a bold, maybe I'm the John the Baptist crying in the wilderness. So be it. We have to learn how to see the body. And when this happens, and we are capable of this, we are not dominated by concupiscence because of grace. Beauty wins. And then the world opens up for us. And guess what opens up? Genuine friendship, genuine intimacy, what we were looking for in the first place in all the pornified images and all those years that we spent wasting our time.
Yeah, no, no, awesome. I think.
Okay, yeah, that was really good. I want to make sure we get to a couple questions that these guys submitted for us before.
Oh, yeah, good idea.
I know we only have like 6-7 minutes left with you, which.
Keep going.
So here's
we can always questions. Do a part two of the interview.
Yeah, absolutely. So Christopher Ramsey asked, here's a scenario for you. You got 60 seconds in front of my high school juniors. You have their attention. What is the best elevator pitch that will stick with them when they need it the most? About the pornified culture, about porn in general.
It's a great question. I would use start off with that analogy of if I had a real $100 bill and a counterfeit $100 bill, which would you want? Duh. Well, you want the real one. But what if your whole life you've been programmed to believe that the counterfeit is the real one and the real one is the counterfeit? How would you be able to tell the difference? You wouldn't. And this is what the pornified culture is doing. The pornified culture is telling us that what we really want is something that can never bring us joy. Pornography itself is stealing our joy. It's stealing our intimacy. It's destroying the possibility of genuine friendship with others. And if you're looking, and so many guys want to have genuine relationships. They want to know how to just first and foremost talk to women, let alone have a relationship, and let alone hopefully get married someday, right? It's destroying our capacity for doing this and wreaking havoc in so many ways. I mean, this is where, and I would also ask the question, do you want to be a slave or do you want to be free? Well, guess what pornography does? It enslaves the mind, it enslaves the heart, and makes us blind. And a blind man cannot lead. And no way and no how does a man want to be led around with a chain around his neck. But instead, he wants to be the one who leads, the one who is the determination of his life and where it goes. So if we want to see the world for what it is, we got to realize how big an epidemic this issue of pornography is, the pornified culture, and learn how to see through it so that it does not have power over it. To use that phrase from Ultron or Jiminy Cricket, you have no string over me.
That's awesome.
There's all for you.
Yeah, good answer.
Okay, so Matthew James asks, for practical ways, and he emphasizes practical, like real ways, to help protect his sons and daughters from finding porn.
Great. So first off, I would say as parents, and that's another reason, any parent, please pick up this book, okay? You're not necessarily going to share it with your kids right now and then, but you're going to need to address this. I mean, if the average age of exposure is between 8 to 11 years of age, I know some kids who have been into it 6 years of age. I talk about a 5-year-old boy who was exposed to this in the book. So it's everywhere. So we've got to learn. So first off, you got to normalize the body. You got to normalize what are the demons that you're wrestling with in your heart. If you've got pornography in the house, obviously it's got to go. But what are the ways, your own ways you talk about the body, the ways in which you carry your own body, moms and dads, okay? Because there's stories of moms that are talking bad about their own body. What kind of language does that speak to their teenage daughters or even earlier, right? So we've got to get this. We've got to get this normalization there. Second, train them in beauty. Teach them how to do this. Get them into real things. Because so many times we plug our kids, you know, we get them on TV or watching TV or on the iPad or on the phone. To give a phone to a young kid, literally you're messing with the way in which their brains are being developed. But also second, it's like giving a loaded gun to them. If you've never trained them, right, they're going to end up shooting themselves because they'll stumble into YouTube videos and the commercials there are pornographic. There's commercials for Amazon are pornographic, right? It's all over the place. So you do have to be aware of that. But on the flip side, you've got to train them in beauty. You've got to train them in how to see the body. That's why, perfect example, in our house, we have images of the Sistine Chapel. We've got Adam hanging over in our living room. Adam, in the moment right before creation, he's in all his glory, his naked glory. And so this is something they're growing up with, something normalized. And as they get older, we're going to teach them about the principles of beauty, the principles of art. Teach them, okay, what's going on here? To see that the body is not something to be ashamed of. It's not something we show off necessarily inappropriately, but it's not something to be afraid of here. And so when we can be trained in the truth here, the counterfeit loses its focus. And then the other giveaway would be, what's the point of our life? The point of our life is to be a gift. So teach your kids the small ways of sacrifice. How can you sacrifice? Easy example. You got an older brother and a younger brother. When pancakes are being served, teach the older brother to serve the younger. Whoever's the weakest, the littlest, this is what the church is all about. The poor, the orphan, right? All those things. It starts now. So when you can have those conversations about being a gift, learning how to do this, and teaching them, you know, when they do something wrong, in our times of correcting those, we ask, what is the body for? The body is for love. The body is a gift. Then when those emotions get eroticized, which in the normal course of life happen, it's not this big weird conversation about, oh my gosh, we have the talk and we never talk about it again. No, we have these normal conversations about, okay, what are those feelings all about? We identify, we talk about those feelings. What is that attraction all about? It's about being a gift to the other. It's inappropriate, not just a sin, but inappropriate for me to want to use another human being because in essence, they're my brother and sister. They're the one that I'm called to love. And why am I able to do this? Because I can see them as a human person that they are.
Steve, where can they get your book?
Sure. So you can either go to Amazon, just type in Redeemed Vision, Setting the Blind Free from the Pornified Culture. You can go to my website, freedom-coaching.net. And as an offer, if you contact these lovely gentlemen, and I do mean lovely, Adam and Dave, just send a message there. Send them $20. They'll send me the $20. Yes, they will. And then I'll send you out an autographed copy.
$20.
That's a good deal.
That's a deal.
This is a big resource. This is one that I will have in my library and will continue to reference because I didn't get a chance to really talk about. I know we gotta get off here, but I didn't even get a chance to reference how you really laid out the book and how you have these carved out areas in the book with great quotes and great explanations, and you have case studies. I mean, the book is well worth the money. I highly recommend it. Give him a 5-star Amazon review as well.
If please, you get the please.
Book, give him an Amazon review, because that'll help him get the book out. Steve, I'm extremely grateful for your time. Your blessing to the church, I'm grateful for your time with us.
Awesome, gentlemen, you're doing good work, and thank you for the honor to share tonight.
We're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass and cheers to Jesus.
Amen.